Blog Talk Radio.
And Groomer Talk Radio, and thank you to everyone for joining us today. Today, I've got a few announcements first, and we're going to welcome Barbara Bird. And Barbara, if you're out there, I will bring you on the show just shortly. She and I didn't have time to talk yet. I want everyone to know we still have about a week left to win the Wall Motion Clippers. I'm sitting over here looking at them. We're going to be giving a pair of them away, one for the winner, one to pay forward. Very simple to enter. Just go to the Groomer Talk message board, and there is a thread in the general talk section. And on the main page, there's also a picture of the clipper. You click that, just enter your name, let us know who you're going to donate it to. It's of interest to all of us, and we'll have the drawing at the end of this month. And then, by the way, we're going to be bringing up another Wall Pay Forward contest for the following month. These are getting very popular. It's a great effort on part of us to go out to these clipper companies, get these arranged, and get them shipped out to you. But it's wonderful. The clipper companies, Wall, has been awesome with us, doing it about three, I think, this year. And some of the other companies also doing the same thing. So we're so happy with that. So please go ahead. Very easy. Just enter. Just put your name on the board. Couldn't be as simple. No quizzes, no nothing. Although we do have some major contests coming that will be a little bit more challenging. Some of you may remember we had a treasure hunt contest. Boy, was that one fun, but it was a huge prize package, and we are working on one for next year. You'll have to search for treasure across the world of PetGroomer.com. We had a great weekend watching the Hershey Show. And by the way, congratulations out to Todd, Shelley, and all the crew there for doing a great job. And Todd is going to be actually on the radio with us here at the end of next month. That'll be a great time to see what they've got planned for next year. But our very next show, that's 2 weeks from today, we're going to have Mitzi Hicks from Golden Paws. We're going to have Danelle German from, of course, the National Cat Groomers, and we're going to be talking about grooming schools. And we're also going to be having on that show following that one, Mary Aquindo, who many of you know from the message board, and she'll be bringing us up to date. And some of you may just be seeing the Colin Taylor book that's come out being published through Melissa Verplank's company. And Colin is going to be here with us in about 1 month from today. We haven't set the exact date, but it will be our last show of the year, which will be early November, because, of course, it gets very busy for the holidays. And then we're coming back with some great people in January. Jody and her daughter will be on. Christina Pulaski is coming up, and a long list of others. We're really branching out this year. This new format's getting known. We've had about 6,000 or 7,000 replays so far. So really, you know, for starting up this route, we're glad to get the information out to you. So let me go ahead and see if I can get, we call her B-Bird for short, but that's Barbara Bird, a certified master groomer. Hello, Barbara, are you there?
Hi there, Stephen, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi. Okay, great. I'm glad you're there. Let me give you a short introduction. You know, if I try to tell everyone everything you ever did, I'd be talking for the rest of the 60 minutes or so here. But we also call her, as I said, Beaver. She's been grooming since 1971. She owns Transformation Pet Center in Tucson, Arizona, which she opened in 1977. She specializes in Bichons and scissor trims and hand stripping of terriers, and she does cat grooming. She's, of course, known as a prolific grooming industry writer and speaker for well over 10 years now. She did receive the Cardinal Crystal Achievement Award as a grooming journalist in 2006 and 2007. She writes not only for our own e-groomer journal, but she the Bichonce Reporter, and she has her own books, and we'll let her mention those books as we go on and how to get a hold of her if you'd like to see everything. And by the way, she's also been part of positive educational training with the online seminars. So how are you doing, Barbara?
I'm doing great, Stephen. I'm really excited to be here with you today, and thanks for the lovely introduction. You make me sound so cool.
I think you are cool. Absolutely. Are you kidding? You know, we were talking about, you know, giving me some things that we would be chatting about, and you brought up such a great one just to start off with. And I do want to back up and know how you got into grooming, but what's amazing that you're in your 70s, you're willing to share that with us, and you're still grooming in your 70s. That gives a lot of hope and inspiration to a lot of people. We've seen on the board, people even say, oh, look, I'm in my 50s. Are you sure I can be a groomer? Well, you're living proof of that.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm very proud of my longevity in the industry, and I do have some, I do have some thoughts on that. It's a rough job, and we have to take care of ourselves, but I'm really happy that I'm still trucking, and I just love to groom. I would be miserable if I had to stop altogether, more miserable than the little aches and pains that I have at the table. So you want to hear about how I got into grooming?
Well, let's stay on the longevity for now. We'll back up to that.
Okay.
But
what are some
of your secrets to the longevity in grooming?
Well, I've kind of learned the hard way how to take care of myself. And one thing that I learned the hard way is that taking care of my feet and having anti-fatigue matting everywhere and wearing supportive shoes is really critical to my health at the table. And I made the mistake of grooming in my concrete board shop for 17 years without any padding under my feet and wearing cute shoes instead of supportive shoes. And I'm paying a price for that now. So if there is one thing that I would do differently than what I did, it's that. It's taking care of my feet and spending money on fatigue mats before I bought another pair of scissors. And the other things is just a matter of learning how to manage my own stress and not let things overwhelm me when I'm running behind or a dog isn't turning out like I wanted it to. Some dogs, you know, sabotage our work and the work looks like crap. And I've learned to kind of let that go and say, well, this is good enough. This is the best I can do on you today. And I've learned how to be graceful with customers and have customer relations such that things don't boil up and get rough on me. Being able to let go and not take things personally has been a real part of my survival. And it was really critical because I tended to be a very tender-bellied young groomer, and I took everything very hard. If I lost a customer, if the customer was unhappy, it was like harder on me than it was on them. And I learned how to kind of move away from that position and just put on a customer service hat and pretend I was somebody else hearing the news. So there you go. Taking care of yourself is the most important thing. And the other thing that I learned to do is I learned to sit down more when I'm Zooming so that I do a combination of sitting and standing. I don't just sit and I don't just stand, but I do, I kind of alternate or I switch around during the day. And that way I take care of my back.
Great. Do you use a special type shoe now with more support? Which ones are you using most successfully?
Well, you know, I got forced into using orthotics in my shoes like 10, 15 years ago. And I wore these clunky, ugly German shoes for a while that were custom orthotic fitted. And but now, right now, this moment as we speak, Stephen, I'm wearing Gravity Defier shoes that have springs in the heels. And they're not the kind where the springs show on the outside of the heels. They just look like athletic shoes, but they have a kind of a built-up heel. And it's got a spring in there, so it helps to relieve the stress of the foot on the floor. And these are the shoes where I experience the least foot discomfort at the end of the day. I mean, I have been through agony with my feet. And then the other kind of shoes I like are nursing shoes called Allegria. And they're kind of cute and fashionable, little Mary Janes with a wide foot bed and really good arch support. And I can kind of bounce around on those. And recently I've used my Medicare to get some physical therapy and learn some stretches and how to take care of my back, and I relieved a lot of back discomfort that I've had for years through a little bit of physical therapy. So I think it's really important to seek help from qualified professionals and not just kind of grope your way through the healthcare ideas, but really seek out when things are not going well, you need to take care of it. Does that make sense?
How about do you ever sit down? Are you a groomer that needs to stand?
Well, I groomed standing for years and years, decades. I learned to groom standing. We never were allowed to sit down, and I was very uncomfortable any other way. I had to force myself to sit down because I was like 63 years old, and my chiropractor got some x-rays done and said I had the back of an 85-year-old and that I was going to have to quit. And I just did not want to go there, so I learned how to take, you know, I learned how to sit down, and I use a rodeo stool. That seems to be the best kind of a, I don't like to sit on a plain flat seat. I use a rodeo seat. And there are some things that I like to do standing up, but I can do some, I mean, when I'm working on a standard poodle, I'm standing. When I'm working on a Bichon, though, I can do that sitting down. And I have an electric table with a foot pedal, and I just raise and lower it to work at the right height for my arm and shoulders. And then I may like stand up to get an overview before I take the dog off the table. But I can do an awful lot of my work sitting down, and I just made myself do it.
So let's, in fact, before we go on, I do want to address our listeners. You can give us a call in if you want to ask Barbara something. There's a toll-free number from the 48 states. It's 1-877-537-3018. 1-877-537-3018. 1-800-537-3018. And Barbara, I've had several people send in questions that couldn't listen live, so we are going to get to those in our last half hour of the show. Let's go back.
Sure.
And what got you originally into grooming?
Well, I came into grooming backwards by burning out of another profession. So I originally entered the field of mental health as a MS, a Master's of Social Work, and I hated social work. I didn't hate the field of mental health, but I didn't like the role the social worker often had to play, which was in between the client and the bureaucracy and trying to negotiate with the government and that kind of thing. I just hated it. And I tried working in a number of jobs in the field, and I wasn't really happy, and I kind of self-destructed and needed to find something else. And I had a friend that was a kind of a regional handler at dog shows, and he showed other people's dogs, and he bred standard poodles, and he had a kennel and a grooming salon. And I begged him just to give me a job. I used to hang out there just as a hobby and watch him groom, and I was fascinated by the scissoring and the transformational nature of grooming. And I used to go to the dog shows a lot with my mother. We'd show Iwasa Opsos, and I was always wandering around looking at groomed dogs and just taking it all in. And I just have an emotional response to a beautifully presented animal. So it was kind of I kind of just fell into it. And then I begged him. He took me on as a bather, and I was kind of the low guy on the totem pole at the salon, and I was the gopher and the cleaner upper and every little nasty job thing. And I hung in there, and I begged him to teach me to groom, and he reluctantly agreed and made it miserable for me, and I endured. And I worked for him for 4 years as an apprentice and learned how to groom. And as I gained my skills, I just fell deeper and deeper in love with the work. I love to groom. I do it in my sleep.
Great. So what made you decide to start writing? And you are definitely a prolific writer. Today I was just even going back and looking through your blog, and it's just amazing the amount of content that you have there. So, but what got you first started writing on grooming?
It was writing. It was the internet. I gave up all of my skills that I had developed as a social worker, including kind of my verbal skills. And, you know, I just took on grooming as a physical thing. And I didn't think too much about engaging my mind in the work. I gave up trying to learn by words. And when I got on the internet and got writing with the Groomers Lounge, Joyce Lothery and the women who first started up the Groomers Lounge list, I reconnected with my enjoyment of writing. And that ended up kind of taking off and starting to have a life of its own. And I discovered an ability to explain things to other groomers just in writing, exchanging emails on an email group. And I got a little encouragement, and I just took it from there. I had always had good writing skills. I mean, I had to write a master's thesis, and I had good library skills, so I did a lot of research and gaining my social work degree. And I was comfortable in researching topics, and I had written study reports and things for National Institute of Mental Health. I had done a lot of writing in my career as a social worker, so it just kind of came back around to me. I reconnected my interest in grooming and my former skills and my ability to explain and my ability to write kind of technical stuff, and it just became very exciting, and I'm driven to produce. I'm just kind of not, I just love to put it in writing and have it make a difference.
What was it about shampoos, the ingredients and the conditioners that really influenced your writing?
Trying to figure it out. There I was at the tub, and I was at the tub, and I had a shampoo, gallon of shampoo that I got from the dog show. So I thought it was, like, super good stuff because it came from the dog show. And what I noticed about this gallon of shampoo is that I got kind of down to the bottom, and it was a 12-to-1 dilution, and I got down to the bottom of the 12-to-1 dilution, and I was going to run out of shampoo, so I added some more water, and what the heck, it became as thick as the original, and then I diluted that, and it thickened up again, and that just drove me nuts, trying to figure out, why would a shampoo do that, because I always equated the thickness of a shampoo with, like, the richness of that it had a lot of shampoo in there, a lot of detergent or whatever in there. And I didn't understand why if I thinned it out, it would thicken back up. And if I diluted that, it would thicken back up. And it kept maintaining the same viscosity. And I didn't even know the term viscosity. But I learned that in kind of trying to figure it out. And so then I learned about thickeners. And somebody asked a question on the GL list about shampoos, and I looked into it online and researched it a little bit, and I started to have an inkling of an understanding of surfactants, and I wanted to have a more understanding, and I read and I read and I read and I read some of the same stuff over and over again until it started sinking in. And then I wanted to share it with other groomers, and I did. But the first couple of times that I taught about shampoos and ingredients, I just sent my students on. It was all done online, and I sent them to my favorite website. And then that would be their assignment, and they would read, and then we'd get together and discuss it. And I realized quickly that I needed my own textbook, and so I wrote it, and that became Beyond Suds and Scent, Understanding Shampoos and Conditioners by Bee Berg. It's just an inquiry, you know. I have an inquisitive mind. Uh-huh. What is that? What is that? Well, how does that work? You know. I kind of discovered my inner scientist. You know, my inner scientist, and interestingly enough, chemistry was one of my favorite high school subjects, and I took chemistry as my science in college and almost failed because of all the math. That was in the days before handheld calculators or any kind of calculators. We used to have to use this thing called a slide rule. It was horrible. So I kind of reconnected with my inner scientist and my writing, my enjoyment of writing, and it just took a life of its own, Stephen.
Mm-hmm. And for any of our listeners,
without me, you know.
Sure. And for our listeners, if Barbara has written on the pH of shampoos for the eGroomer Journal, and you've written on, most recently it was a two-part article on silicones, And, you know, these are articles that you just don't really find anywhere else in the industry. And whenever the first person I thought of when I said, you know, Eat Rumor's not a regular trade magazine. Let's do some really research-oriented, whether it's the business side or the creative side. And then I said, Barbara Bird, that's who. And you've written just some excellent articles there that can be referred to at any time. So anyone, if you do have an interest in what I'm talking about here, it's at egroomer.com, and there is, you click either the topics link or the author. You can just look up B-Bird, and it'll tell you every issue that Barbara's written. And I encourage everyone to do that because, again, you just don't see articles like this generally. But, of course, and then if you want to even go more in depth, you can go to Barbara's site, and there's Beyond Suds and Scents. And, Barbara, you even went on to do aromatherapy products, right?
Well, aromatherapy is just kind of another facet. It's more, it's what I love about aromatherapy is that it has both a science and an intuitive element to it. So I started playing with aromatherapy because I liked scent and fragrance, and I like the idea of natural ways to sort of manage stress in the shop, and as well as help me balance physically. So I started playing with it, and I attended a seminar in Colorado, and I can't remember the person, but it was a groomer, and she gave a seminar on aromatherapy, and it kind of got me started with a few, little basic information, and then I found that it was just it's a creative thing. It's both science and knowing the properties of different essential oils, and then this great intuitive component of blending them together so that the whole becomes greater than the sum of the parts, and it has a good fragrance value. And I started kind of using some of the same blends over and over in my shop, and I thought, you know, I might just share this with other groomers and create a product. And I did, and that's grown thanks to the support of Sandy at Show Season Animal Products, who distributes my scented groomer products for me.
So what was it that you wrote after the first book? What was your next book?
The next book that I wrote was It's Not Just the Grooming. And that's a book about communication skills for pet professionals. It's kind of customer relations material and concepts like active listening and reading people's body language and all 12 steps for resolving a conflict with a customer and understanding types of clients and their quirks. And that kind of, again, that's the one book that links directly back to my social work background. And I use my MSW degree as a credential for that book. And that's the only place where I use that MSW degree, although it's in the background of everything that I do. And that's one of the hardest subjects there is for me to teach and speak about, because people have a lot of their own ideas about customers and customer relations. And sometimes groomers don't want to hear what I have to say, to be honest.
Yes, my parents wrote on customer relations, and, of course, we did seminars for years. And, you know, to my parents, it was the most important part of their business when it comes to just building the business. And it takes them, you know, there's sometimes these pets that take a lot of patience. It does take a lot of patience working with customers. And there's just some people that are better at being groomers rather than trying to be the business side groomer, you know, business owner and groomer, because, you know, you got two jobs. You got the work of that customer relations as well as the grooming, and the better you do it, the more likely you're going to have a successful,
you know,
steady business.
Well, amen. I realized that straight on, because when I started my shop, I wasn't the greatest groomer. I had been apprenticing. I had done maybe 4 to 6 dogs a day, and doing some bathing, sometimes only 2 dogs a day, and doing bathing for at the kennel that I worked. And I wasn't highly proficient as a stylist. I had some things going for me, but I had a lot of ability to connect with the people. People come to my shop because they like to do business with me. You know, there's an energy exchange that happens at the counter, and it's not. It's really more important than whether you give the greatest haircut. Now, people come to me for my styling skills, too, but I'm not one of those diva stylists that, you know, no hamburger for you. You know, I love working with people. I'm challenged to find what works with different people, how to kind of change my presentation or my body language or what I say to suit the customer. And I've just found that the better I am at providing customer service, the more secure my business is. It's a lot about how you serve the plate, not just what's the meal.
It's very true, because, you know, we worry about, it's one of the key ways to get them to come back. I don't care if they see an ad or someone cuts their prices or whatever. If they're bonded to you, they're going to keep coming to you. Because my mother would always tell everyone, I knew I would hear it, but it was like, you've got 2 clients for every pet you groom. You've got the pet to serve, you've got the customer to serve, both equally. And that way, they return again and again. And, you know, at one point when she left her salon, you're probably seeing some of this, the business was doing the children's dogs of her original client. Mm-hmm. They just stay. They are not going to go anywhere else. The more you can create that bond through not only being a good groomer, but by that bonding with them.
I think one of the things that groomers often miss in the equation is that one of the things the customer uses to sort of figure out how you probably are with their pet is how you are with them. So if you're engaged with them and you're having appropriate eye contact and you're listening to them, then they're going to assume that you're listening and sensitive to their pet. If you're insensitive to them, they're going to think that that's how you are with their animal. So
good point.
You know, good point, right? So
good point.
The trust builds. How they trust you to be with them is how they trust you to be with their pet. And that's the only mirror into the back room that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is what they experience, how they experience you. So it's really important, you know.
So, Barbara, what do you regard as the key issues in the grooming industry today?
Well, I have some thoughts on that, Stephen. I think Of course, those who know me from the internet and from speaking know that I am passionate about the issue of ingredient disclosure and being more transparency and about what's in the bottle of the products that we use. I think it's really time to lift the cloak of secrecy and the kind of patronistic relationship with sales reps that we just kind of take their word for the value of their products without any concrete knowledge of what's in there, and that it's time for companies to start listing their ingredients, and it's time for groomers to start understanding a little bit about ingredients. That if I go to my maker having made a difference in one area in this industry, I would hope that it would be that. I also think that the industry needs to make certification and professional membership more meaningful to the everyday groomer. So we're not going to have more groomers become highly qualified until we make those qualifications make a difference to them. And I don't know. I have some other ideas about that. For example, I think that practical testing for groomers should include either mixed breed grooming or a drop coated teddy bear trim, and not all emphasis on show breed profile grooming. I think it's important that the industry emphasized and brought us up to the level of striving for more perfection and achieving breed profile. But I'm really excited about the infusion of Japanese and Oriental and Asian styling into our universe. And I'd like to see the certification process reflect more what's important to the everyday groomer. I'd like to see more emphasis on safe handling of animals. I'd like to see more teaching on stress management, because stress at the grooming salon often translates into pet abuse. And we need to get rid of that. So there you go.
Any kind of ideas, I mean, that you've thought about? I mean, actual practical technique for that?
Excuse me, I got a little dog mm-hmm. situation. I got a blind dog that's walking in the path of the posse dog.
Oh,
I know. She doesn't know. A deaf dog that's walking, blind, nearly blind and totally deaf dog, walking in the personal space of the little Bichon named Diva. Okay, so ideas for...
What can we do to reduce the stress of groomers?
Well, one possibility is to engage, to spend some of the money that organizations make from professional membership and or certification money, spend on some public relations to teach the public that the credentials mean something, that, you know, and that's more than just a bumper sticker, more than just a decal in your window, but maybe a little bit of promotional work, PR work on Animal Planet, for example, you know, and some kind of public education about training and certification and finding the groomer and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, television, we haven't had the greatest exposure yet. We have had some introductions to creative grooming that was pretty well, but other than that, we've only really had a reality show. And what kind of reality show really can make a positive influence on an industry? You know, that isn't going to be that way. It wouldn't be a reality show, you know. So,
exactly. It's all entertainment. There's no education, you know.
Yeah.
I have seen promotional blurbs on TV for finding an auto mechanic with credentials, you know. I mean, I don't know. We need to promote professionality. And until it's promoted, but, you know, the pet owning public, they're just kind of flailing around blindly from groomer to groomer, hoping to find what they want. They don't even know how to find it, what they want. I did have a customer a week ago call me because she was looking for a certified groomer to groom her two standard poodles, which get done in kind of, I don't know, full scissored trims with a kind of golden doodle head thing that she likes. She's been driving from Arizona to back to Colorado, where she came from, to have her dogs groomed every few weeks. And now she's going to drive 120 miles to me because she's seen pictures of my work on my blog, and she's convinced that I can, and because I'm certified, and because I can scissor her dogs, and she's had just bad luck taking potluck grooming. So I feel for the public that they're just kind of operating without a compass to find good groomers. And it makes it hard for good groomers to say, here I am, you know.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
How do you put good grooming into marketable terms? You know, it's hard. It's hard to find the language to brag about yourself. I just finally settled on this little slogan, we're committed to your best ever grooming. For you and your pet.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of says I care for you and I'm a good groomer, you know.
Barbara, I've had some people send me some emails that they have questions of you. And so I'm going to move over to a few of those and let's see what I've got here first off. If no one isn't real familiar with this, let me tell you that Barbara Bird is a Bichon lover, no doubt. And so we did draw at least one, I think, maybe two here, Bichon questions. I had someone ask, how do you get the best expression of a Bichon on a Bichon, in your opinion?
It's all about the eyes. It's all about the eyes and the little ledge that is above the eyes. It's a wedge, kind of a little wedge shape, and it doesn't have to be as extreme as a show groom, but you have to scissor or clip. I use a speed feed on the 15 setting over the top of the rim of the eyes, and then you scissor back behind the rear corner of the eye at least an inch, and then that sets the eye in deeply, and it shows the hopefully dark pigmented eye rims, because you want to see Bichons almost have eyeliner. And when you scissor that properly, the expression just pops out at you. When you try to scissor it, when you do around the eyes like you would around the poodle, it starts looking more like a poodle. If that Bichon trim, the key to the look, the expression on the face of the Bichon, is to cut away on the top of the eyes. And I have a video on that, and I'm just about to make it public. I have a new gig with a website called Tetocracy.com, where I'm a resident expert, Steve, and I do an article or a video every week. So I've been adding to my YouTube videos in order to pull them into the website. And I decided to make a little video on how to do the Be Shown Head public that I have sold it as a product for a few years, and it's kind of dwindled in sales. And I really want to put it out there and share it with people. So they might want to check with my YouTube channel. It's under the name Groom Classroom or Barbara Bird. Google has kind of messed me up with my YouTube channel. And it's a video of me doing that.
Okay.
Anything else? So the other thing that's important to the Be Shown that groomers don't want to do is the neck crest. You can't just clip the neck crest the same length that you do the body, or the head looks like a basketball on top of a tube. I'm being very explicit. So the top of the head has to gradually slope, or ideally the Be Shown has an arched neck, and it's a real attitude kind of a thing and pulls it all together and it gives that profile. So from the withers up to the top of the head, it kind of arches rather than slopes like a poodle neck crest would slope. And in order to do that, you have to leave a little bit more hair on the back of the neck. You don't have to leave a full show neck crest, but if you don't leave anything, you end up with this kind of snowball attached to a tube. Am I clear?
I think so. And do you have a YouTube video with that as well?
I do have another video that I'll probably put up there that has a number of styling points for the Be Shown, including the neck. And it kind of ends with the neck, but it also includes how to achieve the Be Shown bunge. The little rump is a part of the Be Shown look. And you don't want a butt that sticks out too much, but you don't want a highly angulated butt like you would put on a poodle. You want a nice round little Be Shown bun, and I show how to do that. And I show where to set that neck crest, and I show a number of points. That's a second video. I'm going to put that on for public too. And
okay.
So my idea is that with every video that I make, I'm associating it with some tools that I sell. So I'm hoping that maybe my sales of tools will make up for my giving away my videos.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, we're going to be able to even give out your shopping site. We'll give out that web address for everyone. While we're still on Be Shown grooming, I believe I remember reading a blog post you did that you like to start with the feet, though. Isn't that true?
Oh, yeah. Feet first. Feet first on almost everything.
Uh-huh.
Because
why don't you explain,
if you stick the feet
that
on after you groom the legs, that's what you have, feet stuck on the legs. The feet are actually the foundation of the whole leg. So that's the first thing I do on everybody. On my poodles, the first thing I shave the feet, and then I shape the cuff where the legs stop and the feet start. I shape and bevel the cuff. On the Be Shown feet, I start with getting the feet the way that I want it, and then I scissor up the legs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's real important to have a total look.
You wrote something for us recently that I think it always gets conversations started. Why don't you tell people some of the conclusions of what you came to with ear plucking.
Okay, well, these were not my conclusions, but this was a presentation that I attended. We have a specialty grooming clinic in Tucson that has, there's an oncologist, there's an canine ophthalmologist, and there's a number of specialties, including canine dermatology. So this was a presentation, an evening, a PowerPoint on ears and ear disorders presented by a highly qualified canine dermatologist. And I was kind of amused to find out that ear care was a division or a part of dermatology, but it is. And so the dermatologist specializes in ear problems. And she said one of her key points that we all brought home was it's time for groomers to stop plucking ears. Because, now this is not 100% every single dog should never get its ears plucked, but ears are self-cleaning. This is her word. Ears are self-cleaning mechanisms. And when we pull the hair out, for every follicle that we remove, it makes a little opening in the skin that is opportunistic for bacteria and stuff to enter. And so it's the current thought among canine dermatologists, ear specialists, is that we should do less ear plucking, less making it open and viable for infection to start, and more trimming around the outer ear, even clipping with close clippers. I use a little mini trimmer around the ear opening, and I have little mustache scissors. I can kind of trim. And I only pull out stuff if it's like discolored and a little bit yucky, and I think this dog really needs that. But by and large, I mean, and I have a schnauzer that I've groomed that has a lot of ear hair, and I've been grooming him for 14 years, and the only time he got an ear infection was one time when I really went after the ear hair. And the rest of the time, I just trim it, and he's fine. And it's kind of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. Same thing with the anal glands. We don't need to do anal glands on every single dog that is in our tub. You can feel them. If they're full and they seem to need a little bit of help, you can express them, but you don't need to do that on every single dog because you're actually loosening the muscle tissue and creating a more dependency on manual expression of the anal glands. So the canine dermatologist explicitly said we can back off some on the ear plucking. We don't need to do that. We don't, you know, like it's become such a, well, I'll tell you, you got to do it if you're going for certification or you lose points. It's that ingrained in our profession. You know, there was a time when we needed to kind of substantiate the importance of professional grooming, and having those ears done was something that the groomer could do that owners couldn't do, that they needed us for. And now it's time to relook at that. So how's that for a little controversy?
And it is a challenge. Even if I got a new customer coming, first time to groom here, and their other groomer used to always do the ears. I mean, you know, just really pluck it. And then you would come into a business adopting a different attitude, and they'll probably say, well, my other groomer used to pluck this thing thoroughly, and then it's become a little bit of an obstacle in client relations to sit in today and explain why one does one way and why doesn't another. I can understand that it would be a bit of a difficult situation for groomers to explain today.
It is. And the same thing about the ambulance. I mean, I actually lost a customer with two Maltese because I was willing to do the anal glands, but I made such a point about it that when the dog got an anal gland infection, even though I expressed them, they thought I wasn't taking good care of their dog because I had an attitude about anal glands. And so, you know, like, these are issues that separate us. And I am willing, if it's important to the client, I'll go there. But I share this information. I say, you know, the most current, you know how knowledge shifts and changes as we evolve. And this business about ear plucking is something that's shifting and changing as a body of knowledge. We can still count the number of years that there's been a specialty that veterinary dermatology. But as you're having these trained specialists that are addressing these issues, they're finding that plucking the ears can create a predisposing condition. It doesn't make the ear get infected, but it can create a predisposing condition that's conducive to ear infection. That's what they're saying. So I try to clarify that to my customer, and then if they choose to have me pluck the ears right on, I'll do it.
Okay. And by the way, I didn't have my list of my names. I was supposed to write down the member names from Groomer Talk who had these questions, but I didn't do it. I've got another one here. So,
okay.
But, of course, they're going to know who they are when they hear the question. I've got another one. It says, in a kennel setting where the boss wants all bathed dogs to have a flea and tick shampoo, what is a good non-pesticide alternative? Is neem better than the delimining, or is there something better than even both of those, and yet it's still affordable? And by the way, this is a question from someone in Arizona, where ticks are really the problem, not so much fleas.
I know. Ticks are just so much harder to kill because they have a thicker, tougher shell. And as someone who grooms in Arizona, I swear that when the end of the world we know comes, there will still be ticks and cockroaches. So, so there you have it.
Yeah.
Well, I sure don't want to bathe every single dog with a pesticide shampoo, and I don't think that I don't use a flea and tick shampoo unless I have evidence of parasites. In other words, I see some ticks, and I kind of have a five or more rule. You know, I'll pick five ticks off. If there's more than that, we get a product. And I tend to use a pyrethrin shampoo. But that's kind of, you don't want to do that on every dog. One of the places where I've changed my mind, and I think this groomer that's asking the question has followed me a little bit on this, is that I'm no longer comfortable with delimonene. And that's because delimonene can oxidize very easily and form a potent allergen and cause occasional severe allergic reactions. And it's such a potent degreaser that it really can irritate skin. And if it it's a allergic sensitizer even when it doesn't oxidize. But if it sits around for a while and it oxidizes, it can like become 100-fold more likely to cause an allergic response. And I think that allergic reactions are one of the things that happen to groomers. So I just don't want to go there anymore. So I don't use anything with the limonene anymore. I for fleas, I'm very comfortable just using a strong detergent shampoo, like clarifying shampoo, and use it extra strength and let it sit on the dog for 5 minutes. When I pick ticks, I put them in a dot of Dawn dish soap, and they'll die within 30 seconds. So I have some appreciation of the ability of a strong detergent to kill most ticks by softening their outer shell and rendering them dead. The neem shampoo is probably not as bad. I also am a little bit wary about melaleuca shampoos and using melaleuca for the same reason as the D-limonene. I think if you had to pick something that the owner would be okay with, maybe go with the neem.
Right. I think that answers this question very well. Someone wanted to know, you mentioned sometime past on your blog that you had done a regime of Angel's Glow for tearing, and was wondering whether you still advise Angel's Glow, or is there a new product you're happier with?
Well, I still think that the Pilosin products, and there's a number of them out there now, I still think that Pilosin is the best treatment for tear stains. And here again, another presentation from the veterinary specialty people, a very nationally renowned ophthalmologist, Dr. Meredith, that practices in Tucson, presented us with information about the eye. And we asked at the end, groomers raised the question of tear stain, and he said right out that he thought that Pilosin products were safe as used and were the only thing that made it that were really effective. I've tried every topical. I don't have anything other than the Angel's Glow, Angel's Eyes, those products.
How about, was there any mention of where some go that we should still look at diet allergy that might be causing this bottled water versus tap water?
Well,
was there any mention of that?
Dr. Meredith didn't seem, he thought that a lot of that resided in mythology and people, that he didn't see any consistent results from diet change, not having dyes in the food, and doing distilled water. He didn't believe that. Although, for just nutritional purposes, it's best to feed foods that don't have a lot of colorant and dyes in them. You know, like kibbles and bits. Every piece of food is a different color. Yeah, you don't need all that coloration in the dog's body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, certainly diet and nutrition helps the overall health of the animal. I would think almost, if I had to go with one thing to do internally, I would recommend probiotics to change the flora of the intestinal tract, to increase the immune system, to maybe help reduce the proliferation of the cause of the tear staining.
And just general health, even for humans, we just do so many things that almost at every meal you can be actually getting rid of the good flora in us, let alone enzymes. I mean, there's some amount of food that needs to be eaten raw. I mean, because if you even lightly steam a vegetable, you kill all the enzymes. So I know we're real good. We have some very healthy dogs in our house, and every single meal we put in some probiotics and some enzymes. And people ask us, boy, your dogs have all this energy and just look healthy. I really do think a part is greatly played by the probiotics and the enzymes. Yep.
You're seeing a lot of news on the People Health channels that point to the value and importance of probiotics. Even mm-hmm. the yogurt, what the heck, you know, they love it.
Sure, sure. So you and I were talking in some questions, and there was one that came up between us that, what is one thing about you that we might not know about Barbara Bird?
Well, you might not know that I'm a scissors person, and that I have dived deep into the area of scissors. I'm fascinated by scissors. I have been selling shears to groomers and helping them choose shears for over 10 years and probably 15 now, Stephen. And I don't present it a lot. I don't raise my hand a lot, but I've recently kind of reacquainted. Oh, and I have a book all about shears. That
there
was my third book.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at editing that book. And I've reconnected with my love of scissors and shears just recently because I found a couple of items that I really wanted to share with people. And so that's one thing that people might not know about me is my connection to scissors and scissoring and the whole world of shears and the difference in edges and the difference in handles and how to pick a shear that works for you. So that's one thing that people might not know about me. I'm a shears nut.
Sounds like something you and I need to talk about, another article or something here, too. We'll talk about
could be another article or something. Right?
2014 is quickly approaching. I'm making up the schedule of articles for next year for eGroomer as it is.
Oh, boy, you're planning ahead. You're getting serious.
Yeah. I start taking it very seriously. You know, it's like the holidays are out there, and then all of a sudden they're there. And that always gets in the way of, you know, trying to, when you do a magazine, you got to be way ahead, definitely.
I know. When I wrote for Pet Age magazine, we would get, in July, we would be submitting our ideas for articles for the next year. And we would get, mm-hmm. and by August, we would have our list of what, you know, that we could choose to write on. It was that, you know, I just love writing for eGroomer, Stephen. I love it that there's not a constraint, not a word constraint. I love that you appreciate my technical material. It's just a really good match for me, and I'm delighted to be on board.
Oh, I'm so glad you came along, too, because it is the right fit in that sense, because again, we're good friends with all the other magazines. We're not competing against any of them. I said, but this is an opportunity to allow authors to do research, even go to that level, and you're my top of that. And you know, it's just not always has to be lighthearted stuff and whatever, but not just the icing on something, let someone get deep, and you even needed two articles to do on the silicones, but as a result, we have a great body of knowledge in there. with detail.
That's the body of knowledge. You see, we need to deepen the body of knowledge because it's a foundation, and the stronger that is, the more meaningful everything that's on top is. So I'm very much into that foundational stuff, and even though some of these technical, that silicone two-part just kicked my fanny. I mean, that was hard stuff to grow. I mean, I got so deep into toxicology, and I read so many sad stories about mice, rats, and guinea pigs, and they all die at the end of the story. You know, I mean, I really, you know, to go that deep and then determine what of all of this that you've read and gleaned do you try to share. It's rough, but I love that I can do it and I feel driven to do it. And e-groomer is my format. So, you know, I in the middle of it, I wonder, why am I torturing myself with this topic? You know, why can't I just?
I know people don't realize.
Why can't I just
get
they don't realize.
It's kind of funny. It's true. It's true. Folks listening, I get these emails from Barbara, and they say, "I'm really stressing on this." You know, it's kind of entertaining. It's just like, I'm really. How far can I go with this and whatever? I mean, it's just, oh boy. I mean, you put your whole life and soul into those articles. I can tell. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
So let me ask you something else here. I think that was all of our questions there. Anything special you're planning or shows or something? And you mentioned maybe this year, but 2014, does it hold anything special for you?
2014 holds Australia. I'm going to Australia in 2014. And what I'm doing, I'm so proud of it, Stephen. What I've done is that I've started doing a series of event-based webinars. So we did one a month ago or so. And I sat at my computer in Tucson, Arizona, and the groomers were at a groomer event in Adelaide, Australia. There's like 30-some of them in a room with a big screen with my old face up there. And I broadcast my PowerPoint. I shared my PowerPoint on Beyond Suds and Scents with these groomers sitting at a trade show in Australia. So we're doing a couple more of those kind of remote broadcasts. And I think that was maybe the first that's been done in our industry, you know, a long-distance webinar to an event.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to do a couple more of those, and then next year I'm going to go be in person and do some seminars and stuff in Australia. So 2014 is the year of Down Under for me.
Who knows what else, you know? Yeah, I've been seeing more and more groomers, you know, not large numbers yet, but that are telling me, I'm going to go do a seminar in Australia. So go Australia. That's great that they're importing. That's some of our best people. That's very, very good news. So, Barb, why don't we go ahead and tell people, and I think you did characterize it very well, but rather, you do have a shopping cart where you do sell some things, but so much of your grooming blog really helps people know how to use those products and all. It's a nice tie-in. But where should people start? Which websites? And go ahead and give the addresses where they should go.
I do want to drop, you know, I have my Beebird Talk GroomWise blog. That's articles that are specifically addressed to groomers. But the very original blog was the Groom blog. And that website, I have like 175 articles up there. Many of them are with accompanied by pictures from my grooming table. And that's www.groomblog.blogspot.com. And that's a good starting point. Then I have the YouTube channel that's under Groom Classroom. And I think that I've had a spinoff with another, I think they've kind of Google backed me into Barbara Bird on YouTube. They have some of my videos maybe under that. I'm sorry about that, but it was out of my control. And let's see, what else do I have? My shopping cart is www.shop.bbird.biz. And that's where you can find my books and some downloadable video, PowerPoints, and things like that. I do highly recommend my presentation on coat damage. We didn't get into that at all. That's another topic for another interview. But that's a presentation that I'm very proud about, and it can really make a difference to how groomers understand hair and how the effects of tools and products on hair. So what else do we have? That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I have to refer myself even. I'd like to see that more information on the coat damage. That sounds great. So if they can get that at the bbird.biz site?
Right,
or one of the,
right. They can buy it. They can do it. Yeah, I used to have it as a CD, but now I just do it as a download.
Uh-huh.
And I just send my a recent PowerPoint. That PowerPoint changes and upgrades every time I present it. So I usually sell my next to the last one.
Great. Okay, well, I want to thank you. This almost hour and a half has gone by very quickly. It was wonderful. You know, you and I have worked together through publication all, but here we finally get to sit and chat like this on the radio. It's great.
It was
and
fun.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was. And thank everybody who did send a question in. And so I'm going to bring this to a close, and we'll be talking soon because I do want to get you on our 2014 schedule for articles at eGroomer, okay?
Okay.
If anyone has a question contacting Barbara, you can always send an email to findagroomer@earthlink.net. I'll give you those websites or a phone number, whatever you need if you have any problem getting hold of Barb. Thank you very much, Barb.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. And before we close, I just want to remind everybody, next week we have Mitzi Hicks of Golden Paw Schools. We have Danelle German, who has a great cat grooming school. We're going to sit and talk about grooming schools. It's a little bit longer show. But we have a lot of career seekers that go through the site, so this will give us a chance to really focus on career seekers and even established groomers, what schools today are offering them. Then the following week, October 21, we'll have Mario Quindo. Then we will have Todd Shelley just 1 week. Not we're going to fill in and go every week for as we get close to the end of the radio season. Todd Shelley of Barkley Productions, we're going to ask him all about what it takes to get these shows on, and we'll allow people to have their comments on the shows. I know the Groomer TV coverage is really changing things for them, and I want to congratulate them. They did a great job. I thought the commentary was as great as ever on this just yesterday's Groomer TV by Barkley. It really is helping a lot of people can't get to a show just yet what it's like to be at the shows and the competitions and what can be learned. And then also Colin Taylor, What Would Colin Do? His new book. We're actually going to be having him on Blog Talk Radio, I believe, the first or second Monday in November. We will confirm that as soon as the date is set. And there is an announcement about his book already on the message board at Groomer Talk. Remember, get in now. You just got about a week left to get your name in the contest to win a 2 pair of Wall Motion clippers, one to pay for it, one for yourself. Watch for the next Pay It Forward contest just about 2 weeks from now. It'll be starting again. Thanks to Wall for that one. And we'll be having quite a few more, by the way, in 2014. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.